Today's podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, getting back in here on Diamond Conversations, ready to get into the batter's box and chop it up with the Mad Dog, Bill Madlock, of course, a three-time All-Star, a World Series champion with the 1979 Pittsburgh Pirates, and a four-time National League batting champion. Mr. Madlock, thanks so much for coming on tonight.
Oh, no problem. Give me something to do because I've been kind of bored the last 6 or 7 weeks.
Really? Is there anything going on in the news that I missed?
Well, you know, it wasn't for the football draft, it'll be really boring.
Oh my gosh, I know that football draft, which was supposed to be happening in your neck of the woods, was supposed to be the biggest like sports spectacle of all time, ended up being a Skype, you know, live video draft, but thank God for that NFL draft, because that's the only thing we've had around here.
Right.
But of course, in the news with all this is baseball. Baseball's kind of taken like a center stage, because there's really not there's not much that'd be going on otherwise besides baseball this time of the year, but they keep on trying to get it started. Have you followed all the developments with how baseball is trying to get started and how baseball basically they're coming up with a new plan every day, but they can't seem to get all the right kinks worked out yet?
Well, you know, with no fans in the stands, I don't think that'd be anything big, because if you look over the past years, it looked like the crowd at the stadium has been going down every year. It won't bad as nothing though, but you know, but still, I think the kids want to start playing, you know, because when they get paid, but you know, still they got to look for their, you know, health too.
They're up to about an 82-game season pitch at this point. So we're starting beginning of July, potentially playing into the colder months of the fall. It's an interesting breakdown the way you look at it, but it's just kind of far-fetched at this point, because I think we're just kind of dying for any kind of competition, no matter what weird league or what new, what new consolidated divisions that they make up.
Well, it's obviously want to stay close to home, you know, and it's going to be interesting, you know, because, you know, just like the draft, you won't know until you see it and see how people react to it, how, you know, the players react to it. But, you know, still get down to it. It's still baseball. And I think that's the main thing you need to go on nowadays, because our country's at a standstill right now.
Would you kind of liken the preparation that the players are going to have to go into, like how maybe the strike years would have gone, where you guys didn't have exactly, you know, the same preparation time you would have? And I know in 1981, when they had the real consolidated year, you know, would you kind of liken it to that preparation?
Well, I guess you really have to, and I guess some doctors say you'll see it a lot more Tommy John. I don't understand that. If they get themselves in shape and they get monitor how many innings to play, it should be okay, you know, because there's more Tommy John anyway. It seems like more, you know, because of the kids are throwing so hard nowadays, and you can't, no way you can get away from it, you know, with that arm whip and everything. So, you know, I won a batting title that one year, you know, I think they consolidate, how many times at bat you have to get before you win it. So I think I hit 323 one of those years, and that was the short strike season.
Yeah, that was 1981, and that was the season where the Montreal Expos basically came about as close as they could have to get into a World Series again, because it was just unpredictable. And I think that's what we have here, you know, kind of on the horizon, is an unpredictable year. Now, who would this benefit? Would it benefit a pitcher? Would it benefit a hitter to have a shortened year?
Well, I it depends on how they do the roster, though. Are they going to put more pitchers on the roster? You know, I mean, right now, I didn't like the way they was doing it anyway, with 26-man roster, and you can bring up two at the end of the season. I think that was ridiculous. Or the three batter rules. So it depends on how they do that. They got to revise all of that, I think, you know, the so everybody could be, you know, be safe and, you know, and have enough pitchers, have enough players. So you can't see until they say what the roster is going to be like.
Yeah, no, absolutely agree. And, you know, and again, with these divisions, you know, even if it is for this half year or 80 games or whatever it's going to be, you know, it's kind of like you're creating new rivalries, you're creating new scenarios. And I know, you know, if you look at it from the East Coast perspective, you could potentially have the Mets and the Yankees in the same division. And as somebody growing up in New York, New Jersey, that's like that is absolutely like sacrilegious. So it's kind of interesting, but, you know, it could make for, you know, a very memorable 82 games, that's for sure.
Right, and then it's 82 games, going to be a full season. How they going to give the time service, you know, how they going to break down the salary. So I know I was reading something about the Players Association was thinking about what they're going to do with the player's salary. So it's a lot, you know, because so you got to look at it too. 81 games, will the owners have to pay them half their salary, or you at half time? So it's a lot of stuff to go on before that July come around. So, you know, they got a lot to do, and they have to, you know, open up. Most of all the players probably been doing some type of work, right. And they always talk about they don't need that much time when you go see that now.
Yeah, I think that's actually been one of the more interesting things of this layover that we've had waiting for baseball, is seeing the guys that have been kind of posting the training videos and showing, you know, what their workouts look like. And I mean, some guys have very extravagant, very very peculiar, but very cool setups that they're working on. But it's nice to see the guys putting in the work still, because, you know, some of those guys pick up a ball for the first time in 2 months, they could be looking at a lot of trouble once they throw that high velocity, you know, high power pitch.
Right, so that's the whole thing, you know. It's because you're gonna have to have more than a 26 man roster, I think, you know, to do that, because I don't think the pitchers can go out. It almost got like be spring training for the first 30 or 40 games, and then it'll settle down, because you just can't go out there and let a pitcher go six or seven innings and expect them not to affect the arm or sometimes. So they almost going to have like a 30-man roster.
Mr. Madlock, Doug here, kind of on that same topic. You know, you played in an era where spring training was a little bit shorter than it has gotten in the last few years. So how long would you need to warm up? Do you think, you know, if the owner came to you and said, all right, we're going to start on this day, when you're out of it for so long, how long do you really need to get ready?
It's going to be at least because regardless of what type of exercise you do at home or you know, away from your complex and stuff, it's still not the same, because I could work out all the time I wanted to in Pittsburgh or Chicago. But then when I got down to Florida or Arizona, it's like I never worked out at all. So it's going to be like a full spring training. You're gonna have to almost have a full spring training to get back in the shape.
You know, you mentioned something before about service time, and I think that's another biggie that a lot of people may be overlooking. If there is no baseball this year, guys that have been traded to teams, especially the high profile, the Mookie Betts move, he's never going to suit up with the Dodgers. So I find that to be a kind of a tricky, you know, circumstance. What do you think about that one?
Well, but the only thing about it, I don't think the Boston want either one of them, you know, because with Mookie the money, and with David Price is his performance over the last few years. So I don't think they would bother Boston one way or another. I think it hurt L.A. more than Boston.
You know L.A. well. You played there for a little bit there in the 85, 86. So you know L.A. Those fans, if they lose Mookie Betts, they're not going to be happy.
No, you know, they have to. And I think, too, they probably thought this was the year for them to win, because they have came so close the last few years. And, you know, and it's you know, no cigar. So that's the whole thing, you know, with and you know, in the Western Division, the way they do it, it's going to be pretty tough. Matter of fact, all divisions are going to be very tough the way they do it now, you know, the three division. It's going to be it's no favorite in either one of the leagues. I mean, because it's going to be close. I mean, it's probably take the 80 plus games to win it.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to wrap your head around. But let's talk about you. What are you up to these days, Mr. Madlock, out there in Nevada, kind of doing your thing? What's up in the world of Bill Madlock these days?
Well, nothing right now. We have a batting cage out here, and obvious that's closed down. You know, any recreation facilities closed down. So, and obvious, you know, with the I usually do a few things with the Cubs coming in, dealing with their corporate sponsor and their suite visits. So that's out. So really just, sitting around, my wife, she got caught in Panama. So I'm solo.
Really?
She's down in Panama. She's down in Panama for the last, 2 months and, probably another month before she can get out of there.
Oh, wow. Now, how long was she there before all started?
Yeah, she was down there visiting her family. She was down there a month before all this started.
Oh, wow. Man, oh, man. Was there any chance she was going to be able to get out, or was this just kind of like close the door and that was it?
They closed the door. They're a little more strict down there. And, you know, not like if she was in Panama City, she should get, but she was some like 4 hours from Panama, you know, and they give you get to move around by the number of your on your citizenship card. You know,
oh, wow.
If you got two, you can go shopping on a Monday. If you got three, you can go shopping on this, or you can move around for 2 hours. You know, and the last two Saturdays and Sundays they've been closed down everything. So but like I said, she's American citizen though, you know, but she could, you know, it would have took some doing to get out of there, you know, by, you know, plane, from the, United States, but you know, it was just too much of a hassle.
Wow. That's we're sorry to hear that and hope you guys get reunited soon. Cause we were just talking before we got started. It looks like in some places things are starting to ease up a little bit, which obviously goes along with talking about the possibility of baseball returning. But, for you personally, we hope, you guys get to, get reunited very soon.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you very much.
But it also could lead to how we got connected to begin with, and that was, through a really cool autograph signing that you're doing, set up through yourself, through your Facebook page, which I think is very cool. We'll talk about that for a second as well. You got a little bit of time on your hands to do that, so that's a very great opportunity to connect with the fans. What made you come up with this idea?
Think of something to do, watching the games. And it's really funny, you know, I've been getting a lot of questions about, you know, black in baseball, because the people who've been watching a lot of the people on Facebook who've been watching all the games on there, and they ask me about, they see a lot of black players on teams, and they keep on asking what happened. You know, because the number is going down every year, it seems like. And I'm going to write an article on that on my Facebook page about that, because I deal with, kids. You know, I probably have one or two black kids come in to every 300 or 400 white or Hispanic kids come in and work with me. So, you know, I talk to them about it. So I'm going to let the people know what I think about it and what they tell me about where there's not that many black in baseball anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and on Facebook, on Twitter, it's a great way to connect with fans instantly, you know, and a lot of fans, they can connect to you, whether it's a post or whether they send you a message. And that's awesome that you'll be able to get the chance to kind of share your thoughts and, maybe some interpretations as to why that is. Do you have any ideas you could share with us now as to why you think that is?
Well, I think now... before, when I could play three sports, it's just a little bit, but now they make you only play one sport. And most of the, black athletes I know, they like to play basketball or baseball, basketball or football. And like saying, and all those sports, run into each other. So the coaches and everybody make you choose one sport instead of letting you play other sports until you can develop. And I think that's one reason, and that's one of the reasons too, right there, because they don't get to play multi sports anymore.
Yeah, and if anybody could be a role model, it would be one of the greatest third basemen of all time there. So I'm curious to read what you have to say.
Yeah, it's interesting because I talk to the kids and they tell me their reason it's some of it's it's not good though, but some of it's I can understand it, but it's just I look at it not just black players, I'm talking about American players, not just that, because they're dealing with the same thing. The American player dealing with the same thing, black or white, you still limited almost one sport.
Right.
Instead of limited, in the other countries, it's only one sport. Dominican, Venezuela, Puerto Rico, it's one sport. That is baseball. Here it's many sports to play, and I try to get other players going, but they just don't seem to feel they get a fair shot when they go out for baseball.
As far as being a multiple sport athlete, there's a Sports Illustrated article from a few years back that mentions that, you received over 100 scholarship offers, not for baseball, but for football and basketball. With all that in mind, would you think that you would have continued on the baseball path if you were growing up today?
It's really funny because, back then, nobody came to a baseball game. You're lucky to have your mother and father there, football, basketball, the school loved it and everything about it was a more exciting sport. So I really don't know, but I was fortunate, in Decatur, Illinois, where I grew up, we had a minor league team. So, and that helped right there too. Hmm. And I think what helped too, I know they got all these other countries that every team got an academy. Puerto Rico got academy. Almost every team got academy in their particular country. And we don't have that. I know we have some type of program, the RBI program, but it's still not the same as dealing with academy where they're teaching baseball, they're learning stuff. It's not the same.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking about what you did by having multiple offers, I look at your stats, I look at your history, and I see, being the winner of a batting title at age 24 is a lot of pressure, and it's a lot of that takes a lot of skill. So what was going through your mind as a young kid kind of ascending up the major league ranks so quickly and taking to hitting as quickly as you did? Because we were looking over the stats before we started the interview, and your numbers against the Hall of Famers makes them almost not look like Hall of Famers. So kind of talk about early success you had in your career.
Well, I think that helped the players who I was around, Ernie, Billy, Stargell, McCovey, and they tell me what they went to just to get to the big leagues, and what I was going through was nothing compared to what they went to. So, they made it, and I watched how they went about their job, and I just wondered, could I would have made it coming up the same time they did? They came up right after, Jackie Robinson,
right,
and the stuff, not being able to stay at the same hotel, can't eat in restaurants and stuff like that. They went through all that, and they still perform. They still at a high level too, with all that going on. So that's just unbelievable on their part.
But 354 at age 24 is unbelievable. And to be in that 1974 All-Star game, I mean, my goodness gracious. What was that like, that first All-Star game, and being around those legends and really taking it all in first time around?
That was unbelievable. That's probably the the first game I watched was down in St. Louis at the old Sportsman Park, and I've seen those guys down there. You know, we used to watch them on Saturday. I think it's about maybe one game back there on Saturday, and all of a sudden I'm sitting in the dugout with them. You know, that was just unbelievable. It was, it was nerve-wracking because I was scared.
Who was the guy that you, like, kind of gravitated to the most?
Well, you know, in an All-Star game, it was a little different back then. It wasn't a big fanfare like it was. You know, we just went and took batting practice, hit, and played the game, you know. And, I remember the one guy that I was right, we stayed at a hotel with Bobby Bond. You know, he was one of my favorite players.
I love the players from your era. Classic. These guys can never be duplicated again. And you see the competition that you had. It's just, you had such an amazing, amazing career. And to put you on that list of guys that are not in the Hall of Fame, is that something that you think about? Is the Hall of Fame still in the mind of the Mad Dog as you watch the years go by?
No, it's not, because, after a while, you know, you really don't know how to choose the Hall of Famers, you know, because it seemed like every year it goes from this guy shouldn't have it. He played in Colorado, or this guy might have been on steroids. You know, it seemed like one guy could be on steroids and get in, another guy can't be on steroids and be in. So it is just. And I think, too, is with all this MLB, all this sports thing, I think they almost force some of the writers to pick a player.
Right.
Because it seemed like, you know, and just like all these stats, you know, I listen to some of these players and they talk about them on TV. And I think I'm talking about Willie Mays, and you're talking about guys hitting 10 home runs and 50 RBIs, but they got this replacement, they got this, that, like that, you know, and it, you don't know how they choose it now. You don't know how they choose the, because, you know, you look at guys like Parker, you look at guys like Vader Pinson, you look at guys like Jim Cott, you know. I always thought you go by your stats.
Right.
You know, that's Hall of Fame, you know, and you know, just like picking an All-Star game, All-Star game is you pick from the beginning of the season up until a week before All-Star. That's who should make the All-Star game, not what they did last year or the year before.
Right.
And that's why I understand, you know, and the same way with MVP, you know, and the same thing, you know, obviously everybody knows who's the best player in baseball, that's Trout.
Right.
But that don't mean he's having the best year every year.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's and that's the whole thing, you know, because I thought the kid from the Yankees last year was MVP. LeMahieu.
Yeah, no, he had an amazing year.
Or the kid from the kid from Houston, the third baseman. Those guys had tremendous years, and it was on a good team, you know. And Trout's not by far the best player, but that don't mean he had the best year that year. And that's the whole thing, you know. And that's I think that's all got to do with the people on TV. They brainwash and they almost force it a sports writer to vote for him. Or then you get one guy say, I'm not going to vote for this guy because other guys will vote for him. So, you know, how does it work?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I flip over the baseball card. I look at the average. I look at the hits. I look at the runs batted in. You know, I kind of go with that classic view. So I guess the Mad Dog's not really an analytical guy. Now, somebody like our statistician here on the show, Doug, is more of like a stats and a numbers guy, and he can hit you with those wins above replacement and all these different things. But back in the era where you went off the stats, I mean, that is, to me, that's what baseball's all about. Is I look at your numbers and I say, my God, this guy was an amazing hitter.
Yeah, you can't go by that, what happened, you know, when I played because they didn't count that. They didn't get, they weren't going that way. They was going by, you know, base hits, home runs, RBIs and stuff like that. Now you got guys, you know, driving in 50 runs and they tell them that, you know, they're the greatest player ever, you know, and stuff like that. You know, it just, I don't understand. And I don't try to understand, and I don't spend too much time worried about it.
Yeah, exactly. Doug, what else do you have that you found in terms of the more modern stats that they brought out about Mr. Madlock?
Well, just looking, you know, I've spent a lot of time looking at sort of individual matchups, and, you know, to be honest, I mean, you wore people out. And what's been interesting to me to look at, you know, some of your stats versus, you know, a guy like Tom Seaver, you hit 306. Steve Carlton, you hit 311 with, you know, 16 RBIs and 38 hits. And you can go through example over example of guys that you really took care of, including, you know, Jerry Royce, you hit over 400 against in 80 at-bats. So there's one task that I wanted to ask you about, though, that, you know, it seemed that you had real trouble against one person in the prime of their career. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about Fernando Valenzuela in the early 1980s.
Well, I think, you know, he was unique, you know, because, you know, he threw that curveball, I mean, that screwball, which, you know, we'd never seen it before. You know, just like they had two pitchers like that. They had one from the left and had one from the right. They had Marshall, the reliever. So he was different. He'd give you all that motion, eyes all over the place. He was unique. He was, unique pitcher, you know, we haven't seen before, you know, but, you know, just after a while, everybody got used to it and it didn't seem to be that much problem.
Yeah, your last season you faced him, you had a couple hits, including a home run.
Yeah. I think it's a lot harder to hit nowadays because of you face maybe three or four pitchers a game. Back then, we probably faced 1.5 pitcher per game. And I think that, you know, and now, you know, you got one guy throwing 96, the next guy throwing 97, 98, and 99. So it's a big difference. Baseball is different. You know, it's almost like they almost have to, over the last 30, 40 years, almost have to put it in 10 years, you know, this, because baseball have changed so much over the years, you know, for, you know, with the there was steroids, the regular baseball when I played, and now the way it is now, so it's three different over the last 30-40 years have been three different type of baseball.
Now, you mentioned those different types of baseball. Is there any player that comes to mind that you think maybe time didn't give their due because the game changes so quickly?
I just think, you know, I watch baseball. I still think, you know, Barry Bonds was the greatest hitter I ever seen in my life under any circumstance. I got to face Clemens, and he was at, you know, only a couple of times he was by far the toughest pitcher that I faced. So, you know, they got their due, but I don't think they're getting their due right now, and they should be, because, you know, just like I said, you know there was rumors about other certain guys being on certain things, and they're in the Hall of Fame now. You know, they just pick out ones that they don't like and just bury them.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, and before we wrap it up here, and we're going to get to that in just a second, I want to talk about the autographs again. Doug pulled up a really great trivia question here that we're going to hit you with. We're going to play a little Mad Dog trivia. Doug, you got that guy queued up? Let's test the trivia skills of the Mad Dog.
I'm not too good at that.
Like I said, I went back and I looked at, you know, pitcher versus pitcher and or batter versus pitcher, and it takes a long time. Almost 30 pitchers to get to anyone that you hit under 200 against. Do you know off the top of your head who that might be?
No.
I'll give you a hint. You played against him from 1978 to 1987.
Still no idea.
Scott Sanderson.
Yeah, I can tell you the reason for that. You know, being in Montreal at the old Olympic Stadium, that background had that big sun coming through, and you know, he was what, 6'6"?
Yeah, big guy.
Yeah, and it comes right over the top, and I couldn't see the ball.
Now, on the flip side of that, I don't know if there's anyone else that could say they hit 311 off Steve Carlton in 122 at-bats. That's not a small sample size. What was it about Lefty that you really got his number?
Matter of fact, Lefty was my I never did. You know, somebody told me that I never could, because he was the toughest pitcher I think I ever faced in my life. I really had to bear down. You know, he was just, I mean, I think he's the greatest left-handed pitcher ever pitched, you know, because he was just, you know, when he came over to Philly, he was right over the top. He threw me a lot of fastballs early in the count. I tried not to get two strikes on him, because if you got two strikes, you know, you're getting that back leg slider.
Okay. And then one more, not so much a trivia question, but I mentioned before, you hit .414 against Jerry Royce with four home runs and 12 RBIs. What was it about playing against Jerry Royce?
He was just right over the top. He didn't throw that hard. His breaking ball wasn't that great. So he was easy.
like I said, you know, a lot of guys, you made Hall of Fame pitchers not look like Hall of Famers with some of those numbers. So, you know, you did your part at the plate.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, as like I said, as we wrap it up here, I put it over before the Facebook. It's Bill Madlock on Facebook, and on Twitter, it's at Madlock Bill. You're doing an awesome autograph signing through the mail, where fans can send in their items to be signed by you. You said you have a lot of time, so hopefully you get a lot of items sent in, and you have all the information on both the Facebook and the Twitter page. But what is it about connecting to the fans like this that you enjoy? Is this something more we can see in the future? Is kind of eliminating the middleman and people going direct to the source?
Right. It's really fun, because last year I had a lot of people came out to Las Vegas. And when they came out to Las Vegas, I had lunch with them. And then they came to the batting cage, and they took batting practice. So, you know, that that's the first time I did something like that. And it was fun, you know, because, you know, people say, you know, can I come out and see you? Can I take batting practice? Can we have lunch? I said, if I have time, I'd do that. Which I had lunch with a few of the people. So it was really fun, because I just started a few years ago, you know, and sometimes, you know, some of the people who get on Twitter and Facebook, they try to take it too serious. I said, I'm not a writer. I'm just having fun. I just want to connect with some of the fans and have fun, you know, so, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, be some great writer or no great star. I just want to, you know, talk to the fans and give me something to do.
Yeah, they're giving you something to do, and it's really cool the way you connect, and more, you know, there should be more connection with fans, and I think a lot of people, especially from your generation, I think we look up to you guys so much that connecting with you is a big thrill, and it's been a huge thrill having you jump on Diamond Conversations with me this week, and I really appreciate the time, the chat that we had the other night, and you know, if you want to hear more from Diamond Conversations, you can follow me, it's at Chad EMB. For Doug, it's at Doug Barclay 17, and for Mr. Bill Madlock, it's at Madlock Bill on Twitter. Come and find some cool stuff, and hang around for some baseball knowledge being dropped by the Mad Dog. So, Mr. Madlock, we appreciate you coming on tonight.
Okay, thank you. You guys have a good one. Stay safe.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.